In Ecclesiastes chapter 8, you'll remember we're looking at the world in which we live and the outworking of it. You need to be wise in order to handle the world properly, keeping in mind that there is great inequality, injustice, etc. And we share together in chapter 8, and in verse 8, there is no man that hath power over the Spirit to retain the Spirit. That means he can't add 1 minute to one's life. And neither hath he power in the day of his death. He cannot say, this is the moment I will die. Can't do that either. And there is no discharge in that war. There is no way to say, I can get relieved from the problems, the pressures. You can't do that. You have an old nature. You are in a world of people, humans with old natures. And the God of this world is seeing to it that our old nature prevails. And thus the war is a war, and we share that together. And there's no relief in it. There's no way you can say, my heart is at peace with God. It is at peace as long as you maintain it by faith. The minute you don't do that, it's all gone. It's only as good like your breathing. Your life, physical life, is as good as your next breath. That's all. One breath at a time. And so, looking at life realistically and rightly, the world we live in, neither shall wickedness deliver those that are given to it. In other words, you cannot go and say the bad guy can use his badness and rescue himself, save himself, spare himself. The bad guy can't win using badness. Wickedness, you can't do it. It'll never win, never come out. You're always a loser. Verse 9, all this have I seen and applied my heart unto every work that is done under the sun. There is a time wherein one man ruleth over another to his own hurt. And remember, we shared the one man, Adam, the Adam, humanity, all of humanity, and the issue in 8, and the verses that you're looking at, is that God controls. You and I don't control. We don't call the shot on how long we live. We don't call the shot when we die. We can't stop the war. We can't fix anything, really, so we don't have any control. And that frustrates humans, that they don't have control, power, authority. And therefore, the world is busy trying to get power, control, and authority. And all human beings, more or less, are busy going about trying to have control of something. Control of the kitchen, control of something. Control of something. That's a frustrating thing, because we don't control. And so here's this control business. And humans, when they get power, when God allows them to have this power, God allows them to have it, and to the measure that he does, then, whenever they have it, the end of verse 9, one man ruleth, governs another over another. Humanity governs when they rule, when they have power, authority. They do it to their own hurt. So no one comes out good. When people try to use their own power to control, it doesn't come out good at all. Thus, in our, and we share together that oppression, using that word, oppression, overpowering, oppression by the oppressors is always there. It never goes away. And people have power, control, and you have a problem when people have power and control, usually. Now, having said that, over, if you would, to the book of Acts and chapter 10. this oppression that we looked at, remember, it's always to be found in history, human history. Never goes away, never disappears, always there. Whenever humans have power politically, positionally, anyway, military, a power, any kind of way, work-wise, employment-wise, anyways, then you always have the problem, the potential of this harm, injury, suffering, sorrow. Thus, Acts chapter 10 and verse 38, 10 and 38, how God anointed Jesus of Nazareth with the Holy Ghost and with power, who went about doing good and healing all that were oppressed, overpowered of the devil, for God was with him. And here he is, the Lord Jesus Christ, is helping the people that came around him that were oppressed. They were overpowered. The devil is an oppressor. He lives in a world of oppression. The old nature is oppressive. The old nature is an oppressor. That's what it does. It does it to our own heart, our own self. Thus, Acts chapter 14. Acts 14. And picking up in thought, if we may, Acts 14. And remember now, everyone is doing something somewhere in the world right now, all over the place. Things are going on. Meetings, coups, everything, all over the place. Planned, being done, all oppressing. And thus, chapter 14 of Acts, verse 2, but the unbelieving Jews stirred up the Gentiles and made their minds evil affected against the brethren. So everyone is combining against somebody somehow for some reasons, for control, for push people, you know, king of the mountain, you push someone down so you can get up a little higher. And here in chapter 14, picking up, if I can, in verse 5, and when there was an assault made, both the Gentiles and also the Jews with their rulers, to use them despitefully and to stone them. So there is this movement. And always and somehow, if it isn't Jews, it's Gentiles, Jews and Gentiles. And if it isn't Gentiles against the Jews, it's Jews against the Gentiles, or Gentiles and Jews against the believer. Thus, in chapter 13 in Acts, going back a chapter, verse 50. But the Jews stirred up the devout and honorable women and the chief men of the city, and raised persecution against Paul and Barnabas, and expelled them out of their coast. So, busy, no matter when you live, no matter where you live in history, Solomon is telling you that there's no way to get out of this. It's just there in one form or another. Psalm 10. 10th Psalm. And in the 10th Psalm, you will please note in verse 2. I'll read verse 1 for a little bit of the context. Why standest thou far off, O Lord? Why hidest thou thyself in times of trouble? The wicked in his pride doth persecute the poor. Let them be taken in the devices that they have imagined. The wicked boasteth of his heart's desire, and blesseth the covetous whom the Lord abhorreth. The wicked, verse 4, through the pride of his countenance, will not seek after God. God is not at all in his thoughts. And so here is the addiction. Humanity is addicted to the war of the heart, and they are addicted to doing what they do. So they're after power, they're after being able to have the power, exercise the power, and control, and people want that. When they get it, it doesn't come out good. Usually it doesn't come out good. And so here is looking at here in Psalm 10, pride's bride's pursuit of control. And the believing believers ought to realize they're in a world, and they have to understand how to handle it. 1 Peter chapter 4. You're in a world that is what it is. It isn't going to be different. You aren't going to make it different. You can be different in it, but you don't make it different. 1 Peter, and in chapter 4. 1 Peter 4, and picking up the thought, in verse 13, in the light of all of this business of oppression, oppressors, verse 13, rejoice, but rejoice inasmuch as you are partakers of Christ's sufferings, that when his glory shall be revealed, you may be glad also with exceeding joy. So when you, there's a need to rejoice, a need to honor God in the midst of it all. And remember, now you're honoring God, like in thanksgiving, you're honoring God because he's God. Because God is God. So you thank God. And that's what all the angels we shared the other day, they're there to honor God and look to God. And because God is God, God created the angels, God created us to be able to know him and honor him. That's a privilege indeed, to know him, to honor him. So, looking to God, and here, rejoicing in the Lord, my joy I give unto you. Looking to God, rejoicing, and picking up verse 16. If any man suffer as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God on this behalf. So we're to be rejoicing because God is God. We're to glorify God in it all on account of this. On account of all of these things, we're to glorify God and honor God. Verse 19, not only rejoice and glorify, verse 19, wherefore let them that suffer according to the will of God commit the keeping of their souls to him in well-doing as unto a faithful creator. And so you're looking to God and you're going to commit yourself to God, trust God with all your heart, and God's going to do what he does. He does it in a wonderful way. Now, just tying that in thought so you keep it together, 2 Corinthians, here we are in the world. The world is what it is. This isn't going to be anything other than what it is. So in 2 Corinthians, we are reminded we're to rejoice, to glorify, to commit our heart to God. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, you know, God blesses us. Verse 3, 1, 3. Blessed be the God, even the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies, the God of all comfort, who comforteth us in all our tribulation, pressure, squeezing, that we may be able to comfort them which are in any trouble, pressure, same as tribulation, by the comfort wherewith we ourselves are comforted of God. So we have to go through whatever in order to receive the benefits, to be able to rejoice, to be able to glorify, to be able to commit, and then we're able to communicate that. God's a great God, and the world is what it is. The old nature is what it is. Humans are what they are. This isn't going to go away, not yet. And therefore, you need to know how to handle it. A wise person, Solomon says, a wise person knows how to do this, and if you can't do it without God. You'll notice, please, in the light of that, over if you would, Hebrews chapter 11, just to see, so in case you think some people are immune, they aren't immune, they have to go through the same things, and God allowed them to go through it, and 11, Hebrews 32. And what shall I more say, for the time would fail me to tell of Gideon, and of Barak, and Samson, and Jephthah, of David, also of Samuel, and of the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, waxed valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. So they're looking to God, trusting God, rejoicing, glorifying God, committing their heart to God. Some of them God spared, like Daniel, and others God didn't spare them at all. Most of the people aren't spared back then. They all die. Out in the arena, etc., with the animals, they die. Thus, verse 36, and others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn asunder, were tempted, were slain with a sword. They wandered about in sheepskin and goatskin, being destitute, afflicted, tormented. That's believers in the world looking to God. When the world is oppressive, the old nature is oppressive. The whole business is oppressing. Thus, keeping in mind what you just did in Hebrews 11, remember, verse 13, these all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off and were persuaded of them and embraced them and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. They weren't here. This wasn't their home. This isn't why they're where they're headed. They aren't trying to lock in here. They're trying to lock in there. And they're passing through. They're passing through the earth, time, the sun, rising of the sun, and the setting of the sun. They're passing through the days, headed somewhere. Thus, back over to Ecclesiastes chapter 8. Now remember, you're continuing the thought that in the light of at the end of verse 9, one man ruleth, has control over another, to his own hurt, harm, suffering, sorrow, etc. And now, looking at the world, and how does the world handle this? You would think the world would want to get right and go right and learn, but they don't. In 10 through 14, actually. And remember, the subject matter is the bad examples of unpunished evil. People that are bad don't seem to get punished. And that doesn't help in our world. It doesn't seem that, seems like God should do something. And punish, fix things. But God doesn't seem to do that. And so that makes it difficult, because then people follow bad examples. And thus society gives honor, interestingly enough, to craftiness, lack of justice. They don't have any, society doesn't seem to care about right or wrong. They put people in that some of you remember all kinds of examples. In Boston years ago, Mayor Curley, he went to prison, exercised his powers in Boston by way of prison, got out of prison, reelected him. That's what happens. Now watch. Verse 10. So I saw the wicked buried, I saw the wicked. And now remember, you're looking at injustice, you're looking at oppression by the oppressors. And the oppression by the oppressors who are oppressed by their little and limited power to control. And therefore, people are limited and they are oppressed, overpowered. They are oppressed by the fact that they don't control. They don't have all the control. They're limited in their life, their breath. Situation, weather, sleet, snow, they have no power. And thus the oppressor is oppressed by the little and limited power control that he has, person has. And so the human control, power, authority, God allows that to people to have it to a point. The oppressor oppresses to the hurt, to the harm, to the suffering of both. Everyone suffers. Not only the person who's the oppressor suffers, the people who are oppressed suffer. Everyone suffers. Everyone suffers. We'll see. Thus, God allows power, people to have power. Power to do things. And you know, in the all through history, wherever you want to go, on the great terror, 1936, 1938, in communist Russia, the great terror, and millions of people, captured, executed, imprisoned, killed. And if you go on, and you can get the books on it, you know, and see the pictures. They impaled people, hanging them on a tree. You don't want to look at them even. Looks like Fox's Book of Martyrs. Wow. That's what they did. They did that. Hitler did this in war, and even in Europe and that, I think 11 million people died. People suffered. Millions of people, but not a little bit. Millions of people. We don't know what that is. We never hear that from anybody. We hear the other stuff. Africa, the same thing. You have all kinds of things going on. Just wipe out a whole village, just for whatever reason. Wipe out everybody. Wow. For whatever reason. Clans, clubs, whatever. And they're all out there doing whatever. And now, having said that, I saw the wicked, verse 10, so I saw the wicked buried. And in the light of that, remember now they're looking, as we share together, God allows, and add to that, if I may, before I jump ahead. Solomon is looking at himself. He's looking at his world around him. Even though he's given peace because of David for 40 years, no war. It isn't a good time. It isn't a healthy time at all. It should have been, but it wasn't. Ecclesiastes, before we do verse 10, chapter 2. Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Before we do that, because you'll see the issue, Solomon keeps going back to it. And in First Ecclesiastes chapter 2, going, if I can, to verse 14. Verse 14. The wise man's eyes are in his head. He's looking out. He's looking out at the world in which he lives. He's going to act wisely, how he sees and how he does things, with care and caution. On the other hand, the fool walketh or wandereth in darkness. So here on the one hand is the wise person, being careful and conscious of the world in which we live. And here's the fool, wandering, walking in darkness, letting one thing happen upon another. Now, the issue that keeps coming back, and you're going to have it in chapter 8, when you hit the end of verse 14, and I myself perceived also that one event happeneth to them all. One thing happens, no matter who they are, whether they're in darkness, whether they act wisely, no matter how you do it, you have an awesome thing. The same thing happens to all of them. They die. They all die. The good guy, the bad guy. They all die. Wow. Now, and in order to get that a little bit, everything is the same, no matter who it is, it happens to everybody, same event. And you'll see it there in verse 14, happeneth to them all. Just to get a little sense of that word happening, hold your finger here and go over to 1 Samuel chapter 6. You're looking at the word to happen, and you're going to see it again in chapter 10. 1 Samuel, chapter 6, and picking up, if I can, in verse 9. Remember now, the ark is taken by the Philistines, etc. Chapter 6, 1 Samuel, verse 9. And see if it goeth, they want to see where the ark's going to go. And see if it goeth up by the way of his own coast to Beth Shemesh. then he hath done us this great evil. That's God. But if not, then we shall know that it is not his hand that smote us. It was a chance that happened to us. A chance, an event. It just happened. God wasn't in it. God wasn't in it at all. If the ark doesn't go back to where it belongs, then we know that God wasn't in it. Well, the ark went back where it belonged, and they knew God was in it. They knew God was there. What happened with the event, the chance? How is it happening? How is it working out? Look with me over in chapter 20. Chapter 20. And in chapter 20, verse 26. Nevertheless, Saul spake not anything that day, for he thought something had befallen, something happened. A chance. Something happened. Something happened. Something hath befallen, happened. Befallen him. He is not clean. Surely he is not clean. Saul didn't know what happened. He wasn't sure why it happened. Look with me in Ruth, one other place. In the book of Ruth. And in chapter 2. Ruth in chapter 2. One other place just to get the flavor of it. Things happen. And people try to figure out, was God in the happening? Was God there? Or did it just happen by accident? You see. Ruth chapter 2, verse 3. Ruth, remember, goes back to Bethlehem. From Moab, verse 3, and she went and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and her hap, she chanced, her happens, hap, it happened, it was a chance. Her hap was to light on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz, who was the kindred of Elimelech. It happened to her. She happened to go to the right field to get food. She happened to go to the right one, the field of Boaz. Now, back over to Ecclesiastes. And in chapter 2, verse 14. Ecclesiastes 2 and 14. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walketh in darkness. I myself perceive that the one event happens to them all. I see this happening to each, no matter who it is, they die. They all die. Now, with that little bit, back over. Oh, before you do that, over to Job. Job chapter 14. Remember, we're trying to figure out, Solomon's looking at life, trying to get the answers to questions, why things are what they are, why things are like they are. Most people don't ask anything. They just sort of slide along and don't ask. Job chapter 14, picking up if I can in, chapter 14 in verse 1. Man that is born of a woman is a few days and full of trouble. Very short time and it's troubled. Human frailty, human failure, human fault. We just have it. The war of the inner heart, the nature, we're never discharged, we're never relieved. It's always there, and always there. The control, the lack of control. Someone's trying to control something, have power over something. And that's what you live with. Now, verse 2, he cometh forth like a flower, he is cut down. He fleeth also as a shadow, and continueth not. And doth thou open thine eyes upon such a one, and bringeth me into judgment with thee? God, here I am, I only a few days, only a few moments, if I can, picking up the thought, in verse 4, who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean? No one can. No one can do that. God, you're the only one that can make this come out right. Man's very brief. He's only here for a few moments. Verse 5. Seeing his days are determined, the number of his months are with thee, God. Thou hast appointed the bounds that he cannot pass. There's limits that he can't. He may aspire and dream and wish and try to have power to do many things. But he can't do it beyond what you allow. Can't do it. Can't get beyond it. And no matter what happens, the days are numbered. We're back to Ecclesiastes. And Job was way ahead of Solomon, of course, in time. If I can, skipping the verse 7. For there is hope. There is hope of a tree. If it be cut down, that it will sprout again, and that the tender branch thereof will not cease. So if we cut a tree, there's a likelihood that the tree will grow back and come back. That's true of trees. Verse 8. Though the root thereof wax old in the earth, and the stalk thereof die in the ground, yea, through the scent of water, the scent of water, the water, the ground responds, through the scent of water it will bud, the ground's looking for water, and bringeth forth boughs like a plant. But in contrast to plants and everything that can die and they come back, the tree leaves fall and the tree leaves come back. Verse 10. But man dieth and wasteth away. Yea, man giveth up the ghost, and where is he? Now, everything, you see, people die, said Job. People die, and it's over with. But it isn't true of other things. God, why is it like this? The bottom line, God, we're looking for. You have great purpose, God. And here we are on planet Earth. And it looks like, God, that nothing succeeds. Because no matter who, no matter where, no matter when, people die. The good guy dies, the bad guy dies. Moses die. They all die. And things don't go better. Don't get better. God, shouldn't you do something about this? The injustice that is done, the deserved punishment, where is the deserved punishment? God, why don't you do something? So, what are we looking at? We're looking at the successful oppressor, the person who oppresses, powers, overpowers. And they are prosperous in time, prosperous in life, and they're honored in burial. Now, what kind of world is that? Now, having said that, back over, if you would, to Ecclesiastes chapter 8. Ecclesiastes chapter 8. Here we are on planet Earth. Mankind has all of its problems. Corrupt rulers, crushing of freedoms, human freedom, control by governments. And man tries to move and manage and manipulate, and God seems to not do anything. God waits for the right time, for the right reasons. God waits. That's what he does. Now, having said that, over in Ecclesiastes chapter 8, picking up, if we can, in chapter 8, verse 10. So I saw the wicked buried, passive, buried. They're buried. They are buried honorably. They are buried with much ceremony. The bad guy, the wicked, godless, corrupt person is given an honorable burial. Much ceremony, much to do about the burial. Verse 10, so I saw the wicked buried who had come and gone from the place of the holy. So here I saw them buried, they're buried, and they had come and gone from the place of the holy. The place of the word holy means clean, consecrated, sacred, could be a temple, sepulchre, any place. I suppose you could say a mortuary. A mortuary is sacred. It's a place for the dead. You're supposed to be respectful when you go in there. A place. So here they come. Here's the dead are buried, and they come. They come. They're brought. They're brought to this place. They're brought to the holy place for the funeral. They're brought to the place for the funeral. And in being brought to the place for the funeral takes place, and then they are taken and buried in the grave. Now that's what happens to them. And that's what is done. And they're honored. They're honored all the way. They are honored from the start to the finish. And in their death, they're still honored. Thus in verse 10, I saw the wicked buried who had come and gone from the place of the holy. And they were forgotten. They were forgotten in the city. They were forgotten. In other words, the word forget is in the Hebrew text, to forget. They already had forgotten their evil, as you'll see in the context. Forgotten their evil acts. Forgotten it. And you'll notice, please, and I saw the wicked buried who had come and gone from the place of the holy, and they were forgotten in the city. All that they did wrong, there's another Aramaic word. It's the exact same word. If you looked at it in the Hebrew and Aramaic, it'd be the same word. Same word. To find. And they were forgotten, and you might have in your translation preserved, praised. And in the process of that, that is trying to fill in, when they did that in translation, they're trying to fill in because forgotten doesn't seem to fit, but it does fit. And the word is found. So you always stay to the text, stay to the thing. You don't need to change anything. You need to spend some time and find out what it is and why it is. That's what you want to do. So, in the process, they were forgotten in the city. Their memory is preserved. All of the bad and evil is forgotten in the city where they go. Here they are in the city. All these people are there where the person governed in a corrupt and evil way, and they forget all about it. They forget all about it. Where they had so done all of their evil, where they did all of the things that they did. They are a great example of successful hypocrisy. That's what they are. The oppressor oppresses and seems to win. And God, no one seems to come out all right on this. So how come this? Everyone ends up in dying, dead. And here the people are given honorable burial, honorable mention. They're given little streets and memorials named after them. All of this, and in the process of all of that, God, where are you? Why is it like this on planet Earth? All of this injustice. And they honor the people who are wrong. Now, here in verse 10, and the city where they had so done. Now, the conclusion of that, in the light of this hypocrisy, so this is also vanity. This is vanity, vanity. Remember, vanity is mentioned 38 times in Ecclesiastes. 38 times. And just hold your finger here. And go over to chapter 1, you know where we started. And just going without working at it too hard, chapter 1, verse 2. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, that's Solomon. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Now that's a lot of vanity, isn't it? Vanity, 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 vanity. Chasing transitory, it doesn't last. It is quickly passes away. It has no meaning, purpose. It's there and then it's all gone. It's impossible to understand. It's impossible to figure it out. It's impossible to do it. It's striving after the wind, chasing the wind. Look over, if you would, in chapter 1 again, verse 14. Then remember we did that. Vanity, vanity. All is vanity. It goes nowhere, comes out wrong, never comes out right. Here in Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 14, I have seen all the works that are done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity. There's that word. And then there's the other word, vexation of spirit, feeding on, chasing the wind, feeding on the wind, feeding on the wind. Now, trying to feed on the wind doesn't fill you up very good. It doesn't work out very good. And apart from God, there's no way to understand. There's no way to figure out why it all is like it is. And it seems like such a poor example that the bad is honored, the corrupt is encouraged. Vanity, vanity of all vanities. It seems to go nowhere at all. Well, back over to chapter 8. And thus, when you come to the end of verse 10, this is vanity. This is vanity. How can this thing be? Why does this exist? The oppressed honor the oppressor. The oppressed honor the oppressor who oppressed them. And everyone pays a price because God is found nowhere in that whole system. We're living in a world under those conditions that is godless. There's no life. Thus, vanity, vanity, chasing the wind. And thus, where's the benefits? No benefits. That doesn't seem to pay off. God, where is your good and gracious will? It doesn't seem to work at all. Thus, in verse 11, because sentence against an evil work is not executed, what? Speedily. Therefore, the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to wait on God, to give time and space to see how it's going to work out. It is because, God, you don't do it fast. We're going to follow the wrong examples in the wrong way, and we're going to come out wrong. Because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Though, verse 12, a sinner do evil 100 times, and his days be prolonged, wow, yet surely I know that it shall be well with them that fear God, and which fear before him. You have to wait on God. If you're going to look and try to evaluate it, why does the bad guy seem to have so many advantages, seem to make out so well? Because he's working in and with the world system. If you're a believer, God has saved you out of the world system. He leaves you in the world system. And you relax. You aren't trying to make it. You aren't trying to say, I want to be equal and compete. You compete within reason. Would you go with me, please, over to Hosea? Hosea chapter 12. Hosea chapter 12. Why doesn't God do something? God is doing something. God is doing it. God's doing it in his time, in his way. God waits and does everything at the right time. God allows a whole lot of things. God allows them for his reasons. And we have to wait on the Lord. Hosea 12, in the light of vexation of spirit, feeding on the wind. Here it is. Ephraim feedeth on wind and followeth after the east wind. He daily increaseth lies and desolations, and they do make a covenant with the Assyrians, and oil is carried into Egypt. Here they are, the enemies, and Israel is making agreements and alignments with the enemy. That's what they're doing. And it isn't going to come out good. Chapter 13, verse 1. When Ephraim spake, trembling, he exalted himself in Israel. But when he offended in Baal, he died. So here you're looking at the outworking of Israel. Israel goes corrupt. The northern 10 tribes especially, they go corrupt. And in the process, they feed in the wind. Everyone pays a price. Everyone pays a price. The bad kings, bad priests, bad people are in power. But bad people end up under the bondage, Assyrian captivity, and all of them die. All of them die. God, why didn't you do something? Why didn't you work it out? But God waits. God waits. In fact, we'll do that while we're here. So you have that on a positive side. Verse 4, chapter 13. Yet I am the Lord thy God from the land of Egypt. Thou shalt know no God but me, for there is no Savior beside me. Verse 6. According to their pasture, so were they filled. They were filled, and their heart was exalted. Therefore they have forgotten me, forgotten me. I will be to them as a lion and a leopard by the way. God, you're going to find God not helping you like you'd like. Thus, verse 9, O Israel, thou hast destroyed thyself, self-destruction. But in me is thine help. I'm able to do what no one else can do. Verse 10, I will be thy king where is any other that may save thee in all thy cities and thy judges of whom thou sayest, give me a king and princes. I gave thee a king in mine anger and I took him away in my wrath. God's government and people don't understand that God is letting it all work out. And you have to go along with it. That doesn't mean you agree with it. Doesn't mean you're in line with it. It just means you go along and understand it exists. And the war is in your own heart. So you don't have to go far. If you want a war, start right where you're at. Don't. And then you work with people, school, live, people that do the same thing. And everyone's... And nothing is really solid except God. That's safe. Everything else is very fragile, no matter. Everything's fragile. I like you as long as your swimming pool works. It's the way it is. You know.